Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall, and this is the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of mountain biking, meet the characters involved, hear their stories, and find some insight to help us all get faster on our bikes. In this episode, which is the last of 2018, we're going to be chatting with one of the biggest characters in the sport, Yoann Borelli. But before we get stuck into that, I want to say a massive thank you to 661 and the Strength Factory for supporting this episode and helping us to keep bringing you great content for free. 661 have been supporting us throughout December, and as a Downtime listener, they're offering you 25% off everything. All you need to do is head to 661.com and use the code DOWNTIMEPODCAST25 at the checkout. That's DOWNTIMEPODCAST, all one word, all lowercase, followed by the number 25. They make some awesome helmets and protection that are well worth checking out. I've personally been really impressed by the Reset helmet, which is a €99 full-face helmet that they've managed to make light, comfortable, good-looking and safe. Well worth a look if you need a full face for the occasional uplift day or big mountains trip. I've also done a few rides now with the Recon knee pad, and I must say, super impressed. Really comfortable, they're light, they stay in place without feeling tight around your legs. Perfect pad for days trail riding where you still want some protection, but maybe you don't want to wear a bulky pad. This week's episode of the podcast is also supported by the Strength Factory. The Strength Factory is focused on helping action sports athletes be their best through targeted strength and conditioning program, mobility and nutrition, and it's run by Ben Plenger. Ben has been a guest on the podcast twice before and has already imparted some of his wisdom on how to improve your performance on your bike. I'll put the links for those previous episodes in the show notes over on the website downtimepodcast.com so you can have a listen if you've not heard them already. Ben has recently launched a brand new online program which is specifically focused on us mountain bikers. It's a long-term plan based around a UK year with the bulk of the strength training in the winter, then moving on to a focus on power in the spring, conditioning in the summer to help you stay fit, strong and powerful and maximise your riding, and then a rebuild phase in autumn. It's based on Ben's work with hundreds of riders just like you who want to have more fun riding their bikes. It isn't just a program for racers, and it's going to benefit everyone who wants to be better, in better condition to enjoy their riding. Exercises all have tutorial videos and options to scale for different abilities and levels of experience. The program is a monthly subscription, and each month you'll get a mountain bike specific training plan straight to your inbox. That will contain strength programs, warm-ups, mobility, conditioning and video tutorials for all the exercises to make sure that you're doing things properly and safely. You'll need access to a gym with barbells, some dumbbells and a bit of space. An extra kit like a rowing machine, boxes and bands are helpful but not essential, and you'll ideally need to do about time for around 2 to 3 sessions per week. The program comes with a free mobility guide, and that will help you assess your current position, and then it helps you tailor the program to work for you and make sure you progress safely. Also, when you join the program, you'll get a foundation program to get you started for the first month. If you've done a bit of training in the past, then you might be able to skip this. But for those of you who are new to strength training, then it's a great way to get started. Once you're on the program, if you've got any questions, then Ben's always available via email to help you out. You can start at any time during the year, but now would be a great time to get started and build your fitness ready for the spring and summer months. There's no minimum term or contract, and if you decide it's not for you, then you can cancel your subscription ahead of the next payment going out. And what's more, if you're not totally happy, then Ben will give you your money back. As a Downtime listener, you get 50% off your first month on the program. All you need to do is head to the link in the show notes over on downtimepodcast.com or head to thestrengthfactory.uk. That's thestrengthfactory, all one word, .uk. Then click programs and select the MTB Gym program. Hit subscribe and use the code DOWNTIMESTRONG. So that's DOWNTIMESTRONG, all lowercase, no spaces. And you'll get your 50% discount on your first month, which is awesome. All the info you need is in the show notes for this episode over on downtimepodcast.com. While you're there, you'll also find a page to help you subscribe to the podcast and join our newsletter. And you'll also find a link to our web store where we've got some awesome t-shirts, mugs, hoodies and sweatshirts available. Right, time for this week's guest. Yoann Borelli joins me to talk about his career so far, his views on happiness, social media, doping in EWS, being a dad, and his future plans. Yoann is certainly one of the characters of our sport, so sit back and have a listen to this wide-ranging interview. Without further ado, here's Yoann Borelli. Yoann Borelli, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm stoked.
Excellent. Good stuff. And just tell everyone where you are. I think you're near a semi-sleeping baby. Is that right?
So the baby is not sleeping yet. She's probably going to be asleep in half an hour. So okay. Probably in half an hour, we might hear some crying, but that's that's real life. That's welcome up.
Good stuff. All right, cool. Well, let's wind back the clock to start off with, to your younger years. Tell us a little bit about how you got into riding and into mountain biking.
So basically, I started riding when I was 7 years old. I grew up basically in Pays in south of France, in the same street as Fabien Barrel and Nicolas Vouilleuse. And I remember one day I was playing in the outside with my brother, my older brother, and then we saw this cross-country race passing just in front of the house. And I remember my brother looked at me and he was like, "Oh, I want to do that." And then I was like, "Oh, I want to do that too." And then, I don't know, not even a year later, we did our first race and it was a cross-country race. And that was it. Everything started. My brother went into cross country, like quickly became super good. And he even became world champion in junior in 1999. And, So we kind of, I remember riding a bunch with Nico Vouilleuse and Fabien Barrel and my brother. And then, Fabien was a little bit, he was a little bit mean to me all the time, putting stick in my wheels, and but it was it was good love. And then basically I started to ride, and then in this little village in Pay, we were probably 15 to 20 kids. Racing and riding together, so it was a super good environment to improve. And we were outside on our bikes all the time, and just after school, just right away on the bikes, building stuff, jumps and things. It was super cool.
Yeah, and that's a pretty good group of people to have. You know, people like Nico Vulio and Fabien Barrel in your riding group. You're gonna learn fast, I suppose.
Well, and they were basically our mentors. Like, we were just like looking up to them, and then we were just we were just watching them like our idols, and we wanted to do everything that they were doing. So it was super good to become good.
Yeah. And were you naturally pretty good from the start? Were your race results early on very good, or did it take a little while to kind of learn and get to grips with the sport?
No, I was good. I was good right away. I was good in my category right away. And in France, we have these races, and we basically do in the same day trials, downhill and cross country. And at first, I was super good in trials. So that's where I wanted to go. And I was pretty bad in cross country.
Right.
I never really liked cross country. And and basically when I turned 15, I did my first downhill race on a hardtail, and that's when I discovered that racing downhill was a super high rush. And then I quit all the trial stuff, and then I went like deep into downhill racing at 15, 16 year old.
Yeah. And was it always kind of your goal to become someone who raced for a living, or was that something that's just kind of come secondary?
It was kind of a dream to become, to become world champion or stuff like that. But I don't know if I always believed that I could do it, because when I was cadet and junior, I was like super good in the French ranking at French Cup, and at the World Champs I was like top 10, top 15 around there. But it wasn't like this, I was good, I was going at school, and I was but it wasn't like this main goal. I don't think it became this goal super late in my life. So when I was 15, right, it was just a game. It was my passion. It was just having fun with my friends, and it was just my little thing, my passion.
Yeah, and then you were. Am I right in thinking you were working in Decathlon, looking after the bike section? That was your day job when you left school.
That was way later. That was okay. When I was 26, 27, somewhere around there.
Uh-huh.
So in between. So basically when I, in my first year elite, I became French champion in elite category. And I think I basically had my best results in World Cup in downhill in 2004, 2005, 2006. And I think I was gravitating around the top 20. I got 16 at the World Championship in 2016 in Livigno. Mm-hmm. And basically 2007 was a little bit of a pivot in my life. I wasn't doing stuff that I was liking at school. I was pretty bored. I was racing my bike since I was a little kid. And it was always kind of the same. And I needed a big change. I needed to do something else. I needed to explore. I needed to discover who I was. And then I was at the university. And then I basically quit everything, racing my bike, school. And I bought a flight ticket and I went in Australia with a working holiday visa. And I traveled everywhere. I went to Sydney, Darwin, Cairns, Surfer Paradise. And then I was working a little bit over there and then partying a lot. I was big into the dance floor scene.
Nice, nice.
And, the nightlife was really, a big thing at the time. And when I came back to Australia from Australia in 2010, I started racing downhill again. I tried to do a few walkers, but the level went super high and I couldn't get to my level anymore.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of frustrating. And at the same time, I was working in the bike shop and racing and working a lot. And that's when I started to work at Decathlon. And basically that's when I realized, I was like, dude, you're wasting your time here. Just try your best and race, focus on training, and you want to do that and you can go there. And then that's when it became my goal. It became my goal to become professional. And in 2013, at the end of 2013, I signed my first year professional contract.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah. And am I right in thinking that you made the decision at some point around then to leave Decathlon to focus like full time on training to enable you to get the results that you knew you could deserve?
Yeah, exactly. So it was, I think, in the middle of 2013. Basically that's when the AWS started. I was in the middle of the season. I was having some pretty good results, like top 20s around there, but it wasn't good enough to be a full supported athlete. And mm-hmm. I remember at the time I was racing for Giant France, and at the AWS I was seeing the Giant factory of our team. And then that's when it became like my goal. I was like, you're going to sign a contract with them at the end of season. And my goal was basically to try to finish in front of Josh Carlson and Adam Craig at all the AWS, which I kind of did. And I did a top 10 this year when I started. I quit my job. I was like, okay, go full on into racing, train, race, put all the chances on your side. And then when I did that, I got my first top 10. And then I started to talk with Joe Staub, the team manager of the Giant Factory of our team. And in Final Ligure, I had a meeting with him and he said, yes, you're on board. So that was it. First, first professional contract paid. And so that was, basically a big achievement in my life.
Yeah. And you make that sound really easy. So, you know, the way you say it, I just left my job and trained full time. how do you go about making such that's a huge decision to make. Was it tough for you at the time, or did it feel as easy as now, and now when you talk about it?
It was tough just because of the money side, because mm-hmm. I'm not from a rich family, so money. I know that money doesn't grow on trees. So if you need money, you have to work. And Yeah, so at the time I didn't have a bunch of money, and I was paying for all my season. So I basically had this tiny bit of money on the in my bank account, and I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure if I just quit my job for this 6 month period, I can make it. So I wasn't eating really healthy stuff. I was eating pasta every day, the cheap stuff, and. Nice. But yeah, it's. I think it's. Sometimes in life, you have to take risks and to try things. If you don't try anything, then you're gonna end up regretting. You're gonna regret all your life to haven't tried anything. So we need to try stuff.
True.
Even if you fail, you end up. What's the worst case scenario? Basically, if at the end of this year I wasn't signing a professional contract, well, I would have found another job, and then that's it. But at least I tried.
Yeah. So you kind of thought about that in that way at the time. You understood what the worst case thing was, and you were okay with that. So you went for it.
Yeah, I just went for it. I was like, okay, you have one life. Well, it's this life. So just do it.
Yeah, and it was worth it, right? So that was first pro contract. And then started making some kind of pretty solid progress through the EWS rankings at a time when, well, and it still is, at a time when the sport was becoming more competitive and more people were coming into it as well.
Yeah.
How hard was it to progress through the sport? What sort of learnings did you make, or what kind of things did you do to help you get towards the top end?
But the good thing that I realized with Giant when I arrived at the first team camp, it was that they weren't putting any pressure on us. It was just like, okay, guys, what are your goals? What do you want to achieve? And then so we sat down, and I was like, okay, I think that this year I want to do a few top five, and I want to be in the top 10 overall. And they were like, okay, Johan, we're going to do everything we can to make you achieve this goal. And then I felt like a really great support. And they were also discovering the sport. And we learned together. We were showing up at the races, trying things in terms of practice, in terms of GoPro watching, in terms of like food that we were eating, a bunch of everything. And then all the time we're like, okay, this worked, this didn't. We're going to change that for the next race. And then we were kind of step by step making progress. And during the season, I remember passing from top 15 to my first top five. And then this first top five, I won my first stage. And then from winning this first stage, I was like, oh, I won a stage, so maybe I can win a race. And then I remember the same year in Finale Ligure, after the first day, I was leading the race. And, well, it didn't quite work on the second day, but I still managed to finish fifth, my second top five in my career. So it was, every race we were, boom, making a new step, making an improvement. So, yeah, it was super rad to see that and to feel this support behind me.
And was it all kind of little things adding up, or was there anything big that you did or you changed that you felt really helped?
I think the main support, the main thing is to like to have a good mechanic, and basically you finish your day of practice, and then you talk about few things on the bike that don't work and few things that can be changed, and then your mechanic understands everything, and he helps you to make this changing, this little switch, and then you don't have to think about it. He does everything. The next day you show up, you take your bike, and you trust 100% the job that he did, and you can ride full gas without paying attention to anything. And it's just, that's the main,
improvement.
Yeah, the main improvement and the main, like the biggest support that you can have. Basically, now we have 1 week basically to prepare an EWS, and we do track walk, and we do the practice, one run per stage, and the GoPro and everything. And that's basically you. Like, you can have the biggest support around you, but if you don't do that, then you're not going to improve much. So yeah.
How important is the mental side of it these days?
Oh, it's huge. Like, it's I think it's like 80% of everything. If you feel good, if you feel ready, if you believe in yourself, if you believe in your bike, if you believe in all the stuff that you have on your bike, if you it's just a mental thing. And you can just go for it. You can just release the brake and just let the autopilot do his job.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, very very easy to to say, isn't it? And very hard to do.
Oh yeah, for sure. It takes time, but like I said, it's practice. It's like every time you finish a race, do a little debrief and be like, okay. So I did that. This was great. This didn't work. And then you make improvement. But that's in every sport. It's in enduro. It's in cross country. It's in downhill. It's in every sport. You need to do that if you want to perform at the high level.
Yeah. Have you ever done any work with a mental coach at all?
My mom is a yoga teacher, so. Uh-huh. Basically, I learned a bunch about breathing technique and visualization and this kind of stuff. So it's kind of I know these things since I'm a little kid, and I do them quite naturally. But no, not really. I tried one 2 years ago, but I was doing these things naturally, so I stopped and. I don't need extra motivation. I know that I can focus, I can do it, and boom.
Cool. So you've had some pretty amazing results over the years. You had a good top 10 this year as well. What does it take to kind of get from those top 10s or top 5s to get into the top 3 at an EWS these days, because it's super competitive both in the men's and the women's.
So I think being in the top 10, you don't really you need to be super good, and you need to be strong, being mentally ready and stuff. But the top 10 is quite achievable for everybody that's in the top 30. Being in the top 5, it's a different story. Like, you have to be, you have to do a super good race. And, for me, not having a ton of mistakes, not, having any mechanicals. And, you have to be, for me, mentally, like, super strong, and you have to really believe in it strongly. Now, to be in the top 3, well, I don't know. I haven't done it in quite a while, so I don't know. I'm going to try next year, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, and it's unfortunate, there's been a lot of news around it, and we can't really avoid talking about it, but doping has become something that has unfortunately now become associated with Enduro World Series, which is a shame. Hopefully some positives can come from it. What's your take on the whole scenario so far?
Well, to be honest, after reading what Pink Bike did, they kind of did a super super good articles about it, interviews, and they even went to explain what were the substances and stuff. So I read everything, and then when you see the substances. The first one, you can basically find it in it's a food supplement that you can buy in every store in Canada, in the US, and in Europe. Right. And the second one can be called by another name, and you can find it in some pre-workout stuff. So I don't think that what they did was how do you say, deliberate, like they wanted to cheat. I don't think so. I think it was something that they used to take, like a product that they used to take together because it's the same product. And yeah. Richie and Jared, we all know that they train together. But I think we never had really any education in enduro about doping, about what's illegal. We never had any doping control, actually. And the doping thing never really came. And yeah, so I think that what they did was a mistake for sure. And yeah, it ended up that they failed a doping control. But I really want to know what the project was, and I'm sure that it wasn't a big thing. And we are not talking about EPO, we are not talking about crazy things here. We are talking about stuff that you can find in stores. So of course, when you race at the high level, you it's your job to kind of pay attention to what's on the doping list and the all the stuff that you can't take. But at the same time, as I said, the education that we had wasn't there. Like we, yeah. So I don't know. It's gonna change. So as you say, there is some positive that's gonna come out of that. People are gonna be more careful now because we're gonna have doping control now. And yeah, like it was a little bit. It was a little bit crazy during the last 2 years. Like you could see some people carrying a bag of pills. So I know that it's not like doping stuff. It's probably some supplement that you can buy everywhere. But like when you carry a bag of 20 pills, you're like, "Hey, dude, do you actually really need that to race?" Like,
yeah.
But we couldn't really say anything, you know. So yeah. But now it's going to change, and people are going to be really attentive to that. And when you're going to see someone taking some stuff a little bit in his side, trying to avoid everybody's eyes, I think people are going to point the finger at him and be like, "Hey, dude, what are you doing now?"
And, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, I think yeah. In the long run, I hope it's a good thing and it creates some awareness and people are more careful. Well, but
for sure, it's going to create. It's already creating some awareness. Doping exists, so it's not. It's not a new thing. And but it's kind of crazy that first doping control in the EWS history, and there is two people that fail a drug test.
Yeah, so yeah, it's crazy.
I think that unfortunately, there's probably more. But as I said, probably not an intentional thing, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. What's your approach to kind of supplementation and stuff? Do you try and derive most of what you have from kind of from natural sources, from normal food, or do you use some supplementation in your diet and training?
I don't take any supplement. I don't take any pre-workout. I don't take any supplements. I basically take all my energy with food, the food that I eat. Mm-hmm. I'm a vegetarian, so I don't eat meat. So we cook mostly vegan. I like cheese. That's the only problem. I'm
French. Me too.
I'm French, so of course cheese and wine. What was I going to say? No, I don't. Yeah. So even at the races, I don't eat, like, I don't put powder in my bottles. I just drink water, which is my girlfriend Katrina was kind of giving me shit about it because she's like, "Oh, that's dumb. Like, you should actually put some kind of electrolyte in your bottle to help you go through the day." I was like, "Well, but it's bad on my stomach. So what do you want me to do?"
Wow. Okay. So, yeah, so you literally just water and food.
Water and bars. But even bars, I just take vegan bars. We have a super brand here in Canada and the US. It's called Pro Bar. I'm not even sponsored by them, but that's what I buy. We have another brand that's called Own Energy, and it's organic bars. And I just take that most of the time.
Yeah. Cool. Good stuff. All right. Yeah. Let's move on from from doping and talk about something a bit more fun. You've recently become a parent. I think is it Anna, your daughter? Is that right?
Anna, yeah.
And she's just turned one.
She just turned one. When was it? On last Thursday.
Awesome! Happy birthday to Anna.
Yeah, she's nice. Super cute. She's smiling a lot. She's just about to walk. It's funny, like in the last 2 days, we kind of pull her up and she stands on her own. And then yesterday she did like maybe 5 or 6 steps. And then we were just like, wow, she's walking. And then we tried again.
Awesome.
No, she didn't do it.
You'll have her on a bike soon then?
Soon. I don't know, in another 6 months, I think. Yeah, like a year and a half. You
awesome.
Can join some little push bikes, and then it's going to be fun. But it's already fun.
Awesome.
The only thing that's not fun is that she still doesn't sleep at night. And last night was crazy. Like she woke up at 2:30 and crying, and then we let her cry for a little bit, and then she wouldn't go back to sleep. So we took her in the bed, and then. And then she was like, okay, that's time to play. So at 3 in the morning, you're like, what the hell? And then we try to pull her back to bed. And yeah, it's and at 6 o'clock, boom, wide awake. And then time to go.
Awesome. And so it's obviously changed your life quite a lot. How have you managed to still, you know, fit in being a professional athlete and riding and everything around that? Has that been a big challenge?
Yes. Yes, because basically Katrina and I, we live in Whistler and we don't have a family around. So we basically did everything on our own for a year. So all the time we need to have someone with her. And Katrina is working. She's a coach and she's also active. So she needs to do stuff outside, and I'm the same. So it's basically, kind of having a little amount of time per day that we can go and train and do our own stuff. And but in the winter, for example, in Whistler, you can't ride. So all the time you want to ride, it's take the car, go down to Squamish or North Vancouver. So it's an hour, 2 hour drive. Then you do a ride and then you come back. So sometimes it takes all day. And it was a little bit of a challenge for me to ride last winter. For sure. I remember coming to Chile, the first EWS, and talking to my ex-teammate, Kevin, and telling him, I think that since Fina Ligure last year, I only did 15 hours of mountain bike. And he was like, what? And that was
wow, okay.
The first EWS this year. But it still worked out. It still went well.
Yeah.
So yeah, most of the time in the winter, I just go to the gym and do some, indoor cycling interval trainings, and last year I didn't really touch my bike, but yeah, I was so stoked on riding that same, we go back to the mental thing. So if you're happy,
yeah, true, I guess you're excited to be out on the bike. Yeah,
exactly. Cool. Yeah, it was it was super fun.
Nice. And am I right in thinking you're teaching spinning classes?
Yeah, I teach a spinning class, tag cycling in Whistler, and just once a week, the youth program. So I coach like 15 year old kids, and it's super fun. I like it. It's teaching an indoor cycling class is cool. You put the music up, and then you kind of, they follow what you're doing. I have a program that's already made, and we just follow the thing, and it's good vibe. I like it. I want to coach more and more in the future. That's for sure.
Yeah. So that's your partner's business. Yeah. She does coaching of kind of youth development riders and things. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. She rides a development team. So we kind of do that together. I show up at the races with the kids, and we do some team camps, and I'm here as well. She also runs a winter training camp with like 10 to 20 kids all the time, once a month during winter for a weekend. And we go ride. So she hires coaches like Dylan Wolski or Jesse Melamed, myself. And then, we can, it's good to see that even someone like Jesse really likes to pass on his knowledge, and kids are super fired up, and it's good fun, and it feels good to give back to the young generation.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. It sounds like Whistler's a fantastic community to be part of. How important has Whistler been for you in riding?
Well, what a good thing here is the quality of life, I would say. Like, we are in the middle of the forest. There is Whistler, the bike park in Whistler. There is Squamish, that's beautiful. There is Pemberton. There is a big variety of different trails. And all the time you ride, it's just, it's amazing. You're in the middle of the forest. You are in the middle of nowhere sometimes. And it's super rad. The trails are from super easy, flowy, big jumps to super gnarly, technical, old school, like skinnies up high in the trees. Like it's super cool.
Yeah, and some good people to go riding with around there as well. You're not spoilt for fast people to train and have fun with.
Fast people, and then basically when you go ride, everybody's good here. Like, seriously, everybody is a mountain biker. Everybody is a skier or snowboarder. Everybody share the same thing, which is outdoor sport, and it's amazing because you can go ride with someone that doesn't race at all, and the guy is gonna do crap about it and bunch of things, which are probably some of the biggest jump in the world. So it's pretty insane. Sometimes you see little kids and they do stuff on their bikes and they're like, what the hell? And then you see them on skis and they jump like 10 meters high cliff and you're like, okay, also you do that. it's super inspiring to see that.
Yeah, good place for that for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're often called the happiest person in mountain biking, and it's pretty hard to disagree with that. But I'm interested in what's the secret to being happy? How do you approach life that gives you this kind of energy all the time?
Well, I think I think I can be happy with really little things. Like, I can not happy, but I can feel. How can I say that? That's a tough question to answer. I think I can feel alive, like I can really feel alive when, for example, I'm in the forest and there is a nice light coming down the sky, going into the trees. Like, these kind of little things, I pay attention to it and it gives me a bunch of happiness. Like, little things like that every day. And yeah, it makes me super super stoked to live I guess I'm happy just just with this kind of stuff.
And have you always been that way, or have you learned to be that way? Does that make sense?
I think it's something that you learn. I think that most of the time we are really in our mind. You know, we are really thinking about things and we are really focused into stuff, and we don't really pay attention to what's around us. But if you kind of disconnect to your brain and you are more in the moment, like, I think, yeah, that's the key, being in the moment and seeing what's around, seeing little things like a smile of a person or saying hello and having a hello in return. That's the little things that brings, some kind of emotion in you. And we need to pay a little bit more attention to that and be a little bit more in the moment, not always on our phone. That's a crazy thing now, social media and Instagram and Facebook, and everybody's like stuck on their phone, and you don't live anymore. You just, but I'm also like that. Like, I'm always, really often on my phone and checking things and stuff, but I try to correct it and pull it away. And
I was going to ask about that, because obviously, you know, social media seems to be a sort of a fairly important part of what you do. You know, you've got your Tuto Tuesdays and
I don't do them anymore.
Okay. Yeah. but But like yeah. a really big following and a lot of kind of content that people enjoy. And I'm interested in how you strike that balance between, you know, interacting and having a following and creating good content, but not getting to the point where social media gets too much, because I think it definitely has that potential and causes problems for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think a bunch of people are basically chasing likes and chasing basically when you get like it kind of you know it brings you credibility or like kind of you validate thing and but I think social media is actually pretty bad. And I was into it, like I was, posting every day and doing my Tutor Tuesday things and trying to be the best all the time and blah 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 blah. And then recently, I think I was kind of like, holy shit, I think it's a little bit too much. You need to calm down. And then, you know, like you see a bunch of people and they have nothing to post and they're going to post a picture of them racing 2 years ago. And they say, cool shot from Sven Martin, EWS stage 4 in Colombia. Wow. wow. do you actually have to post that?
Yeah.
And yeah, I prefer to now to kind of post something when I really need to post something or to tell a story or to when I like it goes through waves and you don't have to be this like every day posting something and like feeding stuff. There is too many things out there and Facebook is like completely crazy. There is fake news everywhere. Facebook is dead. It's crazy. And Instagram is becoming the same with all the giveaways and all this kind of stuff. Like it basically drives me crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So do you feel better now that you spend less time on it?
I feel way better. Like I feel like I can do stuff for myself more and I think that actually when you post all the time, you are on your phone more because you kind of checking all the time, comments and likes and oh where I am. Like even if you say that you don't really pay attention to it, everybody does it. Everybody's gonna check his phone and see if he has any comments or if he see how many likes he has. It's everybody does it. But the less you post and the less you check it, it's like something that I realized and it makes you feel better. You're like, well, fuck, I'm not touching my phone anymore. I don't care.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. It's very hard to do. I think they're designed to be addictive, but yeah, it's a battle that I've been fighting, trying to spend less time looking at it. I'm winning at the moment, I think, just about.
It's still a tool, and we still need to use it as professional athletes. We still have to, it's basically in our contract. Like we have to talk about the brands that support us. We need to create content. Now brands, when you're a professional athlete, they ask us not just only to win, they ask us to create things. They ask us to be a good ambassador. They ask us to be good at racing. They ask us to be good at social media. They ask us to be to create videos. They ask us to do photo shoots. So you have to be, now it's a whole package. And so you need to kind of do everything kind of well, but not going into the excess of like, too many social media stuff is too much and people don't like it. And I think more people are kind of realizing that, I'm going to talk about the giveaway again, but I think these things are pure, basically you win a GoPro. Like some people they do giveaway every week and the game is to tag 3 friends and to have them to follow you. So basically you grow up your audience because you give away something, but there is no impact. Like, for example, you're going to have someone that's going to have 50,000 followers on Instagram, but he's going to post something and nobody cares because they only follow him because he gave something away. And he's going to have an impact that's super low. And for me, there is no value. Like if you post a picture saying, hey, sweet shot from Sven Martin, stage 4, blah, blah, blah. Well, your impact is what the story that you're telling. You're basically feeding something that nobody cares about. So yeah. I think, try to be more creative. Take the time, take your time to post something. Think about the impact that you're going to have, and try to tell a story. Try to,
So creativity, then, I pick up on that word, and it immediately makes me think of the baguette. where did that come from?
Well, that came from basically seeing all these new brands of tire inserts and all there is nothing wrong with that. Like, people are trying to create some business in the mountain bike world. They are like, oh, there's an empty space in a bike, inside the tire. Let's put something inside. So basically, they try to create a business in this thing. And then some of them are just, it's just like people say, it's pool noodles with marketing behind it. And then I was like, I was watching one day, they are all media staff. And then I was like, fucking hell, I'm going to create mine. So, and then I was like, fuck, I can do the baguette. I can put a baguette in my tire. So I went I just wanted to do something on my Instagram. And then I went a little bit deeper. So I went on ThinkBike, and then I created a whole blog about it. So it was good, because now I know how to create a blog on my own. Like, I know how to make the pictures well, and the text and everything. So it was kind of a learning thing for me. Like, it took me 2 days to do it. And then I submitted it. And then ThinkBike were like, wow, that's that's pretty rad. And then they posted it, and they shared it. And that was it. That's creativity. It's like the Red Butt helmet that I did last year. It was was just a pure joke. It was just for me to have fun and to show that I'm just a kid. I'm playing. I'm living the dream, as some people would say. And it's my way to show that I'm still having fun and playing, basically. And I'm not taking myself seriously.
Yeah. Do you think part of your ability to be as happy as you are comes from the fact that you're happy to embrace your inner child and keep it amused?
Probably. I think I have no barrier anymore. Like, I can I don't care. I can run naked in the forest if I want at the race, and then take a picture of it and I post it. And I don't care. I have no filters. I have some ideas for the future about how to be a professional biker now in the current moment. And I'm going to talk about everything, about the social media things, about the whole package, and how crazy it is. And I think you just have to. What's the worst case scenario, really? If I do something that's a little bit too borderline, then what? I'm not gonna die.
No, true.
Yeah, and I think some people will be laughing about it, and that's a good reward as well for me. Like, making people laugh, making them smile. That's something that I really like. It tries me a little bit, you know. It's cool. I like it.
Yeah,
I'm a little bit of
talking about close to death. How was it jumping an e-bike over the famous train gap?
It was scary. I remember
how big is that gap? It's pretty sizable, isn't it?
It's it's not that big. It's like 12 to 15 meters long. So it's long,
okay.
But it's not this massive jump, and the running is quite good. So you have to go super fast on it, that's for sure. And my only concern, I was with Rémi Métayer, and my only concern was the speed, because basically when you sprint with an e-bike, the e-bike is gonna help you for like the three first seconds, and then all the rest you're basically pedaling with your own power. With a like 22, 23 kilo bike. And I was kind of feeling that I didn't have enough speed, and I was kind of checking, asking Remy, are you sure I have the speed? And he was like, yeah, I think so. And then at some point I just went for it. And, I remember in the air, I was like, ooh, I'm going to go a little bit short. And then I kind of put the bike a little bit sideways and to grab like another 20 to 30 centimeters. And I just land like just boom, perfect. And then that was it. That was the only one I did it. And I was like, okay, done.
That'll do. Does it feel much different jumping an e-bike? Because it's a lot heavier, yeah?
The landing is in the air, it's quite good. Like it's heavy, so you can move the bike a little bit as you want. But the landing is really like you can feel the weight of the thing. Like you, bah! It's big, heavy landing.
Yeah. How are you enjoying e-bikes in general?
Well, I think they are a pretty cool tool. For example, for trail builders. They can have an e-bike, or instead of a trials bike, they can carry all their tools. They can go discover new places and explore a little bit. But I don't think it's going to replace. Yeah, well, I'm sure it's not going to replace a normal bike because they are heavier. They don't ride downhill the same. It's a little bit. It takes time to adjust everything perfectly, the suspensions and the tire pressure and everything is kind of different. But like, to be honest, all the trails here in Whistler to go up, they are super steep. And now with an e-bike, the climb is not an issue anymore. You just pedal and then you get to the top, you do your trail. And after 2-3 hours, you're done, you come back home, and then, and you're happy. If you still want to work out, like it doesn't take the workout really, because you can go in trail mode or eco mode or even in boost mode. If you want to reach the 25K an hour on a steep trail, well, you have to really pedal really hard. I never reached it. So even if you are 20K an hour, basically you pedal your ass off and you get to the top and you still destroyed. So people that say that it's cheating for what? Really, you're not cheating, you're not racing, you're not cheating, you're just doing your thing. And but it can also be a super cool tool, for example, for me in the winter, you know, when we have to do a long ride, like 3 to 4 hours at a really low heart rate. Yeah. Around here, we can't really do it because on the road, it's not possible, there is snow. So you basically have to ride on the trails, and the trails are so steep that on a normal bike, your heart rate goes super high, even if you go super slow. So with an e-bike, you can actually really pace yourself and do like a 2 or 3 or 4 hour ride super slow. And then your heart rate stays low, and you do your good, the workout on zone one, for example.
So it's, and that helps build your endurance. Is that right?
Exactly. Helps build your endurance and to come back to the e-bike in general, they are coming and people have to accept it. Now we need to work together, like we need to create new zones. For example, in Whistler, I know that they are talking about creating zones for e-bikes, for example, to start first. For example, all the north side of Whistler, that's going to be the first zone that e-bike is going to be allowed to ride in Whistler.
And
they're going to move slowly to different places to see how the trails evolve and to see if it's actually destroying trails, which I don't think, to be honest. But they are coming.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it develops.
Yeah.
Cool. And then you've got another passion that started to evolve into your life, and that's photography.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, is this one you've been waiting for? This is the bit you're most excited about, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of. So basically, I bought my first camera last year, and Rig camera. And right away, I was like, "Wow, this is super cool." I went super into it right away, and we can go back to the same thing as we were talking about, like kind of appreciating the moment. Like, you know, you kind of looking more at things in the nature. You kind of looking more at the lights. You kind of looking more at everything. And photography, it's really about that. It's like capturing a moment, like capturing something that really, you know, gives you an emotion. And I think that's what kind of really I really loved right away. And then all the equipment. The equipment is fucking rad.
what have you got then? What have you been spending your money on?
Well, lenses and new cameras and a bunch of things. it's pretty pricey, and but you can find good deals out there. So it's always kind of always being online and kind of checking things. And then at some point, when you have a good equipment, you're like, okay, that's enough. I can just play with what I have, and then you improve your skills. Like every day, I take my camera with me when I'm walking outside with Anna, and then I take photos of stuff. And then even sometimes the same thing, like the same mountain, but the clouds are different, the light is different, it's a different time of the day. And then I come back later. I go on my laptop, I go on Lightroom, and then I check things. And then sometimes there is a right shot. And then so nature photography is one thing, and then after that you go into action. Sports photography, mm-hmm. and that's a completely different thing, and different settings of the camera, and then it's another world, and I like both things. I really like action photographies will be something that I will do in the future for sure. Maybe join the Squids on tour.
Yeah, sounds good. You get to still ride around the Enduro World Series and take pictures.
Exactly.
Perfect. But there is a big
competition out there. Like there is a bunch of photographers that wants to do that, and so if you get to do that, that could be another goal. Like right now, it's not my goal. Right now, it's my passion, and I really like to do it just for fun. I don't take any money from anybody when I go shoot. It's just my pure pleasure to do it. But maybe at some point, I'm gonna be okay. I want to get there, and then it's going to be my new focus.
Yeah, awesome. You've had a shot published, a mountain biking shot.
Yeah, it went on a UK magazine. It was for Remy's Rampage interview, I think.
Okay.
And awesome. Yeah, that was my first shot published. It wasn't the best, actually. But I think that's a photographer thing. Like sometimes they choose your shot, and then you're like, oh, they didn't take the best one. But anyways, it's still a little reward. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And what camera have you got at the moment then? Are you on a Sony mirrorless?
Yeah, I'm on the Sony A7 III, and I use Sigma lenses. Sigma lenses, because they are way cheaper than the Sony lenses and way cheaper than the Canon lenses, and they are rad as well. The quality is super good. They are a little bit heavy, and some people are always like talking about the weight of your equipment, but fucking hell, when you have a backpack with full of stuff, your backpack weighs 40 pounds to 50 pounds, so a little bit more or less, it doesn't really make a difference for me. I prefer to have a good glass and take good shots than having some lighter stuff and do a shitty job.
Yeah, and you've got some good people around you for advice as well, with Sven and Duncan and people like that on the EWS circuit.
That's the best part about it. It's that I can go to the races, and then there is the best photographers in the world around me, so I can ask advice. And most of them are super open about it. And they give me super good advice, and we talk about gears and settings. And Duncan, I remember at the Trans Madeira, Duncan Philippot, we basically talked for hours about camera, and I think that was a big step in my new passion. And Sven is the same. Like everybody's kind of. And you know, sometimes you look out for Robin O'Neill, for example. I go shoot a lot for that kind with Robin O'Neill, and she explained me a bunch of things. And it's super rad. I have the chance to work with the best photographers in the world, so it's perfect. I take everything.
Yeah, it's worked out all right.
Yeah,
Good stuff. So what are your plans for 2019 then? So full EWS series?
Full EWS series. I might do a couple Urban DH at the end of the season next year. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm 33 years old now. I don't think I'm going to race one over 10 years.
Okay.
I want to give the best that I can for another 3, 4, 5 years. Like really focus into it and do the best that I can in the winter to train super well, eat healthy, and then bring all my knowledge at the races and do the same job that I was doing at Giant, like step by step, making progress, because I know that I can progress still. I'm not like at the top, and I can make this little switch, make like little adjustment here and there. And then last year I did top 5 here in Whistler. I did one top 10 in La Tuile, and the podium is not far. So by doing little things here, little things there, it can happen. And I know that I can do it. I never won any EWS, and I know that I'm going to win one before the end of my career.
Awesome. That's good. What gives you that confidence? Is it just the experience and kind of belief that you have in yourself, or is there, you know, where how do you get that confidence to be able to say that?
Because I came second twice, and I did a bunch of top 5, and then all the time I was super close to in reach of the top 3. Like for example this year in Whistler, it wasn't the best race for sure. I crashed, I had a mechanical, and I remember at the top of the last stage, top of the world, I think I was somewhere around 7 or 8 overall. And in my mind, I was like, Johan, this is the last stage. It's a 22 minute long stage. At the end of this stage, you're going to be in the top 5. And then I just like, I was in my bubble in the moment, like taking every second that I could. And at the end of the race, I got in the top 5. So it's, as we said before, a mental thing. So if you believe in yourself, I know that if I do everything perfect, a good preparation in the winter, everything good at a race, like good practice, some track walk, really efficient, no worries whatsoever around me, feeling good on the bike, being there, you know, like being super strong at the moment, then yes, I can do it.
Cool. Good stuff. But
it's not... I don't think that I will be like, for example, Samil, like Martin Maes, for example. You know, like these guys can, they are at the top, and they are the people that wins everything. They win, or they are on the podium all the time. You know, they are at the top of the game. I don't think that I'm someone like that, but I know that I can, once in a while, bam, I can do my thing.
Excellent. And, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, cool. Me too.
Nice one. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time, but we've got 3 questions that we've asked everyone.
Okay.
So we're going to hit those, if that's all right.
Yeah, all good.
Cool. So if our listeners had £150, which is about 250 Canadian dollars, to spend on something to help improve their performance on a bike, what would you recommend they spend it on?
Say that again.
If the listeners had $250 Canadian to improve their performance on a bike, what would you recommend they spend it on?
$250 to improve on a bike. What would it be? Tires.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be tires.
And do you have a go-to tire that you use for most of the season?
Well, I ride for Hutchinson tires, and there is one tire that I use all the time. It's the Hutchinson Toro. This tire is basically made for every condition. You can ride it in the mud. You can ride it in the dry. You barely have any flat tires. It's basically a tire that you can ride all the time, and it's a super good tire. So, yeah, this will be the tire that I will recommend.
Even without a baguette in it?
Even without the baguette. Oh, and I think the tire will cost probably like $80, 90 Canadian. So that's 160. So you have another 60, 70, $80 to spend. So you can actually buy 10 baguettes or even more in Canada. And then that's it. You have your baguettes for the season.
Perfect. Happy days.
Happy days.
All right. Good stuff. Next question. If you could wind back the clock and have a sit down with yourself at the age of 16, what advice would you give him?
To not be scared about anything, to just to just go for it, to not be scared, to try the best, and to reach to have goals. Basically, the main thing in life is to have goals. You can have dreams. Dreams are amazing, and dreams are amazing. But a dream without a goal is just a dream. So a dream with a goal, that's the key of the success. So to have goals is perfect. So if I'm 16, I would say to myself, dude, make some goals in your life and go for it. Don't pay attention to the people that might say, why are you crazy? You're wasting your time. No, that's your thing. That's your goal. That's your purpose in life. Just go for it.
Good advice. I like that a lot. And then the last of those questions, if you could have a coaching session from anybody, past or present, who would it be and what would you want to learn?
In biking or everything?
Let's have one from biking and one from any other aspect of life.
Okay. From biking, I think it will be a lesson with Samil. Yeah, I think with Sam.
What would you want to learn from Sam? Because I think there's a lot of stuff that he's pretty good at.
how to corner.
Okay.
I really think that Sam is not the best physically. Like, he's good, but he's not a crazy machine. But I just think that he takes corners like nobody else can do. And I think his technique is amazing. I think he breaks a little bit earlier than everybody else. He kind of sets himself, and then he makes his corner, doesn't touch the brakes in the corner, and then exit the corner with a shit ton of speed. He doesn't even need to pedal. And then he's just like consistent speed all the time. And these guys basically has the key to perform in enduro. Because if you pedal all the time at the exit or every corner, after 2-3 minutes, you end up destroyed and you can't keep going. So it's just like, I think he rides super relaxed and then pay attention to every little detail, set himself, ta-ta-tat. And then, so a good lesson with Samil will be super beneficial for me, and maybe it will help me to get my win. So Sam, I'm coming to Australia and I'm taking a lesson with you.
Excellent. I think he has started doing some coaching sessions over there, but it's a bit far for me to travel.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, he's doing that.
Awesome.
So that's great.
That is cool.
All his students will be are probably super stoked.
Yeah, get signed up. And then what about someone from another aspect of life? Any other kind of wise people that you'd want to learn from?
The Dalai Lama.
Okay.
I think
gotten to the top.
I think the Dalai Lama is a cool dude, and he knows a bunch of stuff about life and about happiness and about feeling alive. And so I think there's a bunch of things to learn from this cool dude.
Are you much of a reader? Do you tend to get through books or not so much?
Not so much. I used to when I was younger, and then I should read more actually, because I'm really into I'm kind of realizing with again social media that when I say something on social media is to basically to say something kind of constructive. And then I get a bunch of message from people saying, "Guy, dude, you're really helping me in life, and you're really a super good mentor. And I think that I want to take this direction. I want to help more people. I want to be more this, you know, kind of give the best that I can to transmit all the stuff that I learned in my life, basically. But to do that, I need to read stuff. I need to learn things. And so I'm gonna have to learn to read things. I'm actually taking courses right now about for being a motivational speaker and some kind of a life coach.
Ah, awesome!
Yeah,
interesting stuff.
Yeah,
how much is it? Is it like a long course to get into those sorts of things?
There is different courses, and so I take courses online, and I think it's going to take me like between half a year to a year to get through it.
Yeah.
And basically, so what I want to do, because I was kind of thinking, okay, if I want to be this kind of a motivational speaker, how can I do it? What's the platform that I can use? Social media, of course. But to organize, you know, this kind of seminar where you talk in front of people, I think it takes time and it's not the right moment for me because I don't have time to do that.
Yeah.
But the biggest platform and the easiest and the platform that is free is YouTube. So I think I'm going to create a YouTube channel and sometimes I'm going to grab a subject, how to have goals and how to reach your goals, how to feel alive, how to, you know, this kind of deep subject, just talk in front of the camera and then for 5-10 minutes and then people can comment, they can give me feedback, I can answer about on the comments and then we can go from there. And then that would be my learning platform. And then I think by talking in front of a camera, you actually, you put words into what you actually do, which is the hardest thing. And then you learn from there.
Very interesting. I look forward to seeing that. That's that'd be a great resource for people, I think, for sure.
Yeah. Well, cool. Thank you.
Nice one. Well, yeah, let us know when it's ready and we can give it a shout out on the podcast so people can find it.
I will announce it and then share it on Instagram and stuff But I think it will be a good thing for me to do. Because I really want to give I really want to give back. I want to be, generous, and I'm generous.
Yeah, and then you can write your own book.
And then I can write my own book.
Yeah,
yeah. Cool.
Fantastic. Cool. All right. Good stuff. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to sit down today. I know you're a busy man, but yeah, really enjoyed it. All the best for the 2019 season. We'll be keeping an eye on how you're getting on.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Right, that's it for another episode. I hope you've enjoyed listening. It's also our last episode for 2018. So a massive thanks to all of you for listening throughout the year and supporting the podcast through what's been a challenging but amazing year for me. I'm super excited to see what 2019 brings. We've got some big plans, so hopefully we can keep on pushing forwards. Thanks to our episode sponsors, 661 and The Strength Factory. Don't forget they've both got great offers for you lot, the Downtime listeners. Head to 661.com and use the code DOWNTIMEPODCAST25 for 25% off everything. And head to thestrengthfactory.uk and use the code DOWNTIMESTRONG to get 50% off your first month of Ben's new MTB Gym Strength Program. We're going to be back early in January where we're going to be joined by none other than Eddie Masters. But until then, get out and ride.